This call is being recorded.
Good morning. Today is Tuesday, May the 20th. This is John Richardson. I'm speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. And this is the second of my podcast series with Anne Levine, author of Law School Expert. And today we are going to talk generally about how to choose law schools, perhaps how to target law schools a little bit, and all things associated with deciding where to go. How are you today, Anne?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me, John.
All right. Wonderful, wonderful. Well, as I said in the opening, we're talking about how to select law schools. So let's imagine that somebody picks up the phone, calls you, and says, well, I've made the law school decision. What advice can you give me, or what principles can you give me for how to think about choosing a law school? Your thoughts on that?
Sure. Well, this is a several step process. This is not something you'll decide in a day. And it will require both an understanding of your credentials that you bring to the table, but also your goals, what you hope to get out of law school. Those are the two things that are most going to inform this decision. And so breaking those down. So first of all, your undergraduate GPA and your LSAT score are going to be the first things to look to see where you might even be qualified to go to law school. They will give you a ballpark on what might be attainable for you. And then once you know those parameters, a great place to start is LSAC calculator. And you plug in your numbers and some geographic parameters, and you'll get an initial suggestion of schools to start looking at. Geographic parameters, or location of where you go to law school, is a huge factor because it often determines where you'll be employed and therefore where you'll live your life, where you'll take the bar, et cetera, not in that order. Also, reputation of a law school is very important. There are definitely people who are geared to going to law schools, top five, top 15 law schools. Their goals will be better attainable by doing so, but not everyone is going to be qualified to do that. And so then you start looking at things like location, job prospects, and cost of attendance. Cost of attendance should be a huge factor, or is for most people. And that, so you can start to target schools based on where you think you'd be competitive for scholarships, where it would be affordable for you to live, et cetera. So those are the big parameters that most people are considering when deciding where to go to law school. We're not usually looking at what area of law you want to practice, because for most people, the area of law you want to practice is something you'll come up with while in law school. And most law schools are really well-rounded and you can do almost anything from anywhere. Exceptions to that might be very specialized areas of law. And so then you might be targeting certain schools that are known for it. But in most cases, it's not necessary to choose an area of specialization like you would choose a major in undergrad. That's my initial response when someone would ask me, you know, how do I even start looking at law schools?
Okay, so credentials, meaning grades and LSAT scores and geography, and to a lesser extent, the type of law that you think you might want to learn about or practice.
Correct.
Could you give an example or two, perhaps? You mentioned some schools or some areas that were so specialized that, you know, you might want to be very careful with the schools you're choosing. What would those areas of specialization be?
It's different for different people, and there are arguments to be made both ways. Sometimes there's an advantage to going to a school where they have an area of concentration or a lot of faculty that specialize in your area, but then it also means that school's attracting a lot of people with that same interest, so you'll have more competition in the field. Whereas if you're the one person who's going to do intellectual property law in your class and you have the professional background and an undergraduate degree in, you know, whatever it is, biomedical engineering, then you may not need to go to a law school that has the area of specialization because you'll be fine no matter what. So there are kind of two schools of thought on this. But for example, people who want to do entertainment law, there are some schools that have a lot of offerings in that area and are also in locations where they have access to professional sports, et cetera. And so those are the kinds of things to consider when you're looking at an area of law. But if you want to do something like, criminal defense or insurance defense or personal injury or, you know, corporate law, like most of those are going, family law, those are going to be available to you almost anywhere.
And I suppose that to a large background you bring into it, you know, for example, patent law would generally attract people with engineering backgrounds and
or STEM fields. Yes, yes.
What are your thoughts on joint programs? You know, this law MBA, law social work, law economics. Yeah.
I think that I usually encourage people to look up on LinkedIn people whose jobs they hope to have one day, okay? And see what degrees that person has. Because sometimes it's just not necessary to have an MBA and a law degree. Sometimes it's not necessary to have a social work and a law degree. And sometimes it can be confusing to employers, like which one do you want to do? Also, there are some... socially, some awkward things about doing a joint degree program. So you start with your law school class, then you leave your law school class to go to business school. Then you come back to law school, all your classmates are a year ahead. So it can be a little bit disjointed. I would say be sure that it's really something you want to pursue to get both degrees, that there's a reason for it before you start doing it. Also, you don't have to apply to the program simultaneously. So that's something to keep in mind. You can start law school and then you can later decide to, during your first year of law school, to add in the joint degree program. I think that most people who say they want to do joint degrees don't actually end up pursuing them. So it's one of those things that sounds better than it may be in reality. So you may want to ask the schools you're looking at if you can talk to students who are doing the joint degree program to get their thoughts on it.
Well, I suppose that isn't one of the arguments in favor of that type of thing that it generally cuts down the time, say, you know, turning what could be 5 years into a 4-year academic experience.
Yes, and that works if you really were going to do both degrees, then you're saving time. If not, sure. Then you're adding time and adding expense.
Absolutely. Now, just to focus on one, I hope, fairly obvious point to listeners, but it's important to go to a law school that's ABA approved as opposed to one that's not, correct?
Well, I won't help anyone go to any other kind of law school. And in fact, okay. I would take it a step further that I would actually caution anyone against going to a law school that's for profit, even if they are approved.
Could you elaborate on that a bit?
Yes, there's nonprofit law schools and for-profit law schools. And generally the nonprofit schools are the reputable ones. So, you know, you have to be very careful. For example, there were students going to Charlotte School of Law or Elon School of Law, like some of these schools, especially Charlotte, people ran into a lot of problems. School closes. They can't get, they have problems. They still owe their student loans. It can be kind of a disaster. Thomas Jefferson, like, so just be cognizant of the caliber of school you're looking at. But generally those are really like the bottom feeder kinds of law schools anyway. So if you're not looking at those schools, you'll be able to avoid them somewhat successfully.
How important do you think are these published rankings, U.S. News, World Report, and that sort of stuff in helping people
The answer to everything is it depends. It depends on your goals. And it depends on how big a difference between schools are talking about. There's not a meaningful difference between number 30 and number 42, but there's a pretty meaningful difference between a school in the bottom 100 and a school in the top 50. And so I think most people, though, are not applying to schools that are that widely ranked apart from each other. Most people are focusing, you know, they're applying to schools based on their credentials, and those schools tend to be similarly ranked. So most people are not really making that choice. Whether people are often making the choice between, say, getting into a top 10 school and getting a really good scholarship to a top 20 school. And that is the place where people should agonize over the decision. I mean, that's a great position to be in. So those are the differences that tend to be more subtle, and more realistically being weighed by applicants.
So in other words, do I go to the top 10 and pay, or do I go to something that's 20 schools below and get a scholarship?
Not correct. Pay? Correct. I want people to struggle with that decision. If they meaningfully struggle with that decision, no matter which side they choose, they're less likely to have any regrets later.
Either way, they come out a winner. You know,
just they kind of do. Yeah, I mean, that's not really a lose-lose situation. That's more of a win-win situation.
Right. I guess we would call that, by analogy, a first-world problem.
Correct.
That's quite interesting. What about the graduate law degree, say the LLM? What are your thoughts on that? Why would somebody consider that or not consider that?
So The LLMs are mostly beneficial for people who are going to, say, go into a very specific area of law, such as tax law, where they need that extra specialization. For most people, LLM is not something they'll pursue. LLMs are sometimes things that are pursued by people who have law degrees from other countries, and they come here to do an LLM here because it can qualify them to sit for the bar, although what their eligibility for employment is still kind of problematic. But for most people, an LLM isn't really something they'll pursue. For most, you know, JD students.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all very interesting. Now, you didn't comment directly on the question of the non-ABA approved schools.
Didn't I?
not to the extent that you commented on the nonprofit or the profit, okay. The profit thing. So I guess the point is that the non-ABA approved, you're not eligible to sit for the bar exam, correct?
Well, that's not true. Different states have different rules.
Not in every state.
Correct. So for example, I'm in California. You can sit for the bar going to a state bar accredited school. There are a few more hurdles you have to jump. That's exactly. So you're in California. You can sit for the California bar if you go to one of those schools. But there are a couple extra hurdles you have to jump through, and the passage rates are lower, and you may have issues with employment, and you'll have different employment opportunities. But I know a number of lawyers and judges who did that in Santa Barbara. We have two local non-ABA law schools here in the city where I live, in a small city, Santa Barbara. And many of the members of our bar and our bench are graduates of it. So it's not that it's a non-starter. It's just that I personally will not help you with those application processes. So but they can work for the right number of people, which has been made very clear by a certain Kardashian who's decided to become a lawyer.
Interesting. Okay, so in summary, basically ABA approved, avoid the profit schools, look at your credentials, meaning primarily grades and LSAT scores, obviously spun better, I suppose, by the application itself. And then, I suppose the issue of scholarships and this sort of thing, and a bit of geography sort of thrown in there. Does that pretty much summarize it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that those are the initial factors. I always say, for example, in my book, The Law School Admission Game, I say there are three factors: reputation, location, and cost. Reputation, location, and cost. Those are the three factors in choosing a law school. The answer will be different for each person based on how they prioritize those three things.
Right. All right. Well, that is great. Let me give you a second. I don't think I quite laid out your coordinates where people get in touch with you at the beginning of this. So if you take a second and let's get that into the podcast, it'd be great.
Sure. My name is Anne Levine. I am a law school admission consultant and owner of lawschoolexpert.com, where I've been keeping a blog on law school related admission material since 2006. I started Law School Expert in 2004, and my full-time job is helping people through the process of applying to law schools throughout the U.S.